Welcome to the Big C in Me podcast. My name is Andy Robinson. I'm a leader of Lifespring Church, the founder of Waymaker International Charity and Zambian NGO. I'm also a blogger, and you may know me from social or video media as the Big C in Me. In January 2023, I was diagnosed with stage 4 bowel cancer. And as part of that journey, I've met some amazing people. Some of them were already good friends, and others were people I'd met briefly in the past, and some are new friends that I've made through social media since being diagnosed. And I would thought I would share some of those experiences and conversations with you. Over the coming weeks, there'll be podcast episodes with those people, and there'll be others where I continue to tell my story, and this is one of those weeks. In previous episode, I spoke about my diagnosis, and this episode will be the first of two where I speak about the prognosis, what happened after I was told that I had cancer and what would be the plan going forward. You will hear me say often that I don't believe that medical healing is a second-rate healing to a miraculous one. As I said on the previous podcast, I want the best of Jesus and the best of medicine. I pray for the miraculous intervention of God, who I believe heals today, and I believe with all my heart that he can. Still, I do not dismiss his common grace given to all of mankind, where he enables the amazing skill of surgeons, doctors, nurses, researchers, drug companies, and pharmacists to bring healing through surgery, chemotherapy, radiotherapy, and medicine. You would not believe the so-called advice that I've been given by some Christians who believe that I should reject any medical intervention and rely on Jesus alone. Others suggest that I drop modern medicine and instead follow a regime of natural remedies such as vitamins and vegetables and smoothies containing all manner of weird ingredients. And I applaud those with the faith that the Bible speaks of in Hebrews 1:1, where it says, faith is the assurance of things hoped for and not yet seen. I have a sure and certain faith that assures me that God is good and that he is the healer, and he promises good to me. He has good plans for me that will prosper me and not harm me. My faith is in the healer. I have total confidence and assurance in him. But at this point, I don't have that kind of faith in a miraculous healing that would allow me to discount God's common grace to us all through medicine. I want the best of Jesus and the best of medicine. As a result, there has been quite an intense regime of chemotherapy and surgery that I've endured, some of which has resulted in further additional complications and more invasive surgery and procedures that were originally planned. The initial medical prognosis that I was given was that I would be having a bowel resection to remove the two tumours in my bowel some 4 weeks after my initial diagnosis, so early February 2023. The plan was that they would cut out the tumours and rejoin the two good ends of the bowel. As I prepared for this operation, I had some more scans, MRI and CT, after which the plans changed. One thing I've learned on this journey is that the plan is only ever as good as your last scan. So often, after a scan, everything changes. And this was my first experience of that. And there would be many more to follow. The new plan that I was now on was that I would have a round of chemotherapy on a drug called FOLFOX. I would have to have a PICC line installed, which is a semi-permanent cannula in your upper right arm, which allows them to take blood and administer chemo easily. I tell people it's like being plugged into the matrix. The line for me was 44 centimetres long, and they inserted it into the vein in my upper arm and then pushed it all along the vein until the tip, the end of the line, was in the open space just by my heart. I know, right? It sounds scary and painful, and honestly, it was neither. At the time of writing, I'm on my third PICC line, and you do get used to both the procedure to insert it and having tubes constantly hanging out of your arm. It was not until I was with the consultant that I realised that chemo and FOLFOX were not a single drug like Nurofen or aspirin, but a cocktail of several different drugs. Different combinations are used for different circumstances and different types of cancer. FOLFOX is a combination of drugs of folinic acid, fluorouracil, I think, which is commonly called 5-FU, and oxaliplatin. This is a very common cocktail of drugs for bowel cancer, and the plan was for this to shrink the tumours, which would result in an easier operation. The plan was 6 cycles, 1 cycle every 2 weeks, and this round of chemo would last for 3 months, after which I would then have the planned bowel resection. My first visit to St Luke's Cancer Unit in the Royal Surrey Hospital in Guildford was, I have to say, quite overwhelming. As I walked in for the first time with Hazel, it was just massive, and the numbers of people having some form of intravenous chemotherapy was huge, and I was not prepared for that at all. There were 5 or 6 bays, each having maybe a dozen or more chairs in, and each chair had a patient hooked up to various machines, which I later learned are IV drip monitors that measure the control of the flow of the various intravenous drugs into your PICC line. But nothing had prepared me for that. Those 5 or 6 bays with the 12 or so chairs in each rotating every 2 or 3 hours with someone else fighting cancer. As a result of COVID-19, friends or family were not allowed to sit with you as your chemo was administered, and so the corridors and every available space in this wing of the hospital had relatives sitting in waiting for 2 or 3 hours for their loved ones to complete their treatment. As this was my first cycle and my first round of chemo, Hazel was allowed to sit with me whilst I received my first infusion. After that was complete, I was then asked to stay even longer so they could assess to see if there were any adverse effects of the drugs, apart from the known side effects, of course. There were none, and so I was allowed to go home. I did suffer side effects. The main side effect I had was from the oxaliplatin, which made me very sensitive to the cold. I could not, for example, get a carton of milk out of the fridge without gloves on, else I would get massive pins and needles type sensation in not just the hand that touched the cold carton, but in the other hand too, and sometimes even the soles of my feet. You don't realise how many things in your home are cold. The marble or granite work surfaces in the kitchen, your brushed metal door handles, light switches, even the cutlery you get out of the drawer to eat with are all metal and they're all cold. I had to wear gloves a lot, even to eat my dinner sometimes. Other than that, though, the other side effects that they warned me about seemed to just pass me by. Now, whilst I'm far from fit, I do have a Fitbit, which for those who don't know is a smartwatch that measures your fitness, heart rate, sleep patterns and a whole load of other health related things. And I use it mostly to measure my sleep as I've always struggled with that. But in all honesty, it was mostly a watch. However, it would prove to be much more than a watch as it pretty much saved my life. The following morning after my first infusion, I woke normally and went downstairs to get a coffee. I felt a little strange, but I just put it down to the chemotherapy. After all, this was a new area for me. I'd not really had anything that would compare to this. And so I didn't really know how I should be feeling. But that morning, I did feel, it has to be said, a little bit strange. I grabbed my coffee and went into my study, and I noticed my watch was flashing with the message, AFib detected. What was AFib? I had no idea. So I had to ask my friend, Google, and found out that AFib meant atrial fibrillation, or AF for short. Atrial fibrillation is a heart condition that causes an irregular and often abnormally fast heart rate. I didn't think too much about it, to be honest, but later in the day, I became very aware of some rapid heart palpitations where my heart felt like it was fluttering. It was only for a few seconds and then it stopped. When I spoke to Hazel, who, as I said before, is a clinical pharmacist, she said that I should call the oncology hotline at the hospital, which I did, and they told me to come straight into accident and emergency. I've been given a special car to show should I ever go to A&E, and I discovered that it meant I was seen immediately and didn't have to sit in the waiting room for 2 to 4 hours as everybody else did. When I was taken through, they took blood and they hooked me up to an ECG to check if I did indeed have atrial fibrillation, and this would tell me if my watch was indeed correct. They agreed that I did have AFib, but did not believe it was from my chemotherapy, so they sent me home again and just told me to keep an eye on it and come back if there were any further signs of AF. It seems strange to Hazel and me that the day after my chemo this happened. It would suggest to us at least that it was a direct result of the chemo. However, the A&E team did not think so, so we carried on normally. I was feeling very fatigued and did little more than sit in my armchair all day, but this was the first cycle of my first round of chemo, and as I've said before, we had no real idea what the impact of that would be on me physically. Maybe chemo just made you feel like this. We didn't really know any different. We mentioned it to the oncology team, who dismissed it much as the A&E team did, as coincidental to the chemo. Still, it was strange to me that the night of my chemo, my watch could not record my sleep patterns because my heartbeat was all over the place. We explained all of this, but because AF was not on the list of side effects of FOLFOX, we continued with the next cycles of chemo. After the third cycle of FOLFOX, I was again struggling with breathlessness, fatigue, and the like. But I was putting it down to the chemo. My watch had not recorded a night's sleep since the night before my first infusion of FOLFOX. And again, one morning when I got up, the watch began to give me an AFib warning again. Once more, I called the oncology hotline, who said I was not to drive, but I should come straight in. Hazel was already at work, so one of my colleagues kindly took me in. Once more, they took blood and put me on an ECG, which showed them that my watch was still indeed correct. But this time, it was during the junior doctor's strike that we were having in the UK, which meant that I had a consultant caring for me in the emergency room. After being on various monitors for almost 4 hours, the consultant reviewed the results and admitted me into the cardio unit. Fortunately, on every trip now to the A&E, I've learned to take a bag with a dressing gown, slippers, phone charger, toothbrush and toothpaste, just in case. I often leave it in the car if Hazel has brought me to the hospital, but on this occasion I had it with me and so I was all set to be admitted. Once in the cardio ward, I could message Hazel and tell her where I was so she should come and visit when she finished work. As part of the induction to the ward, I was hooked up to a Bluetooth ECG monitoring system that relayed my readings to a massive set of screens in the nurse's station. It was so much better than the usual machines, which have that constant beep, beep, beep of your heart and all sorts of other noises and warnings that they make. With 6 of you on a ward, with all of that going on, it would be impossible to rest, let alone sleep. But this system, all the beeps and warnings were outside at the nurse's station. My first night on the ward was uneventful, but the second night I woke and could not sleep again, as I could hear this constant beeping of someone's alarm going off in the nurse's station. Eventually I got up and went to see the mass of screens at the nurse's station and asked them who was constantly making that annoying alarm go off. They laughed and said, "That would be you, Andy." And it was my irregular heartbeat that was setting the alarm beeping all night, and it was my own fault that I could not sleep. A couple of blokes on my ward were a good laugh. One was an ex-policeman and the other an 80-year-old guy. Although he had pulmonary edema, heart condition, was an interesting guy to chat to. Sadly, the other three men on our ward had dementia, so we had little or no interaction with them. But the ex-policeman was up for plenty of banter, which I happily engaged with most days. It turned out that he was from the north, but had a mild heart attack at the check-in desk at Gatwick whilst travelling to Spain for a holiday. The East Surrey Hospital where we were would be the nearest A&E to the airport, so they brought him there. It turned out that things were worse than he thought, and he was now awaiting a triple heart bypass. And when his wife came in for the first time, he introduced her to me, and I acted very shocked and said, "This is your wife?" To which the ex-policeman said, "Yeah, why?" And I replied, "Because I thought she'd be in Spain right now, sipping on a pina colada on the beach." I had visions of her waving as she went through check-in, watching you disappear with the paramedics. Fortunately, everyone, including his wife, erupted in laughter. The old man in the ward in the bed next to me was unable to sleep lying down due to the water on his lungs or heart. And his condition meant that he still slept a lot, but he slept sitting up. He seemed to be dozing off all the time, even mid-conversation sometimes, which may be more due to my conversational skills rather than his condition. Who knows? However, although he was always asleep, he had an amazing ability to know when a cup of tea was being offered. Suddenly, he would come to life and say, "No sugar." One night, I was woken early in the morning, around 5 a.m, by the sound of my own heart monitor beeping in the nurse's station. I got up to speak to the nurses, and it was obvious that I'd pulled off one of the sensors from my torso during the night. And so the nurse sorted that out, at which point I asked her about the monitors in the nurse station. I was curious to see that I was at the top of one of the lists. It turned out that this list was of all patients, not just in my ward, but all of the patients in the whole unit. Now, I can often be a little bit competitive, so seeing that I was at the top of the leaderboard, I was keen to know what I was winning at. It turned out to be the score of patients who had the most erratic heartbeat so they could be monitored more closely. I was winning at having the worst heartbeat. I guess it's not the best thing to be number one at, but I was still number one. I returned to bed with all of my sensors properly attached and tried to go off to sleep when suddenly I could feel a hand on my wrist and a voice saying, "Andy, are you still awake?" It was the nurse that I'd been chatting with. She said, "Are you awake? Can I do your obs now so I can get ahead of my jobs for the morning? And if you say yes, I'll make a cup of tea." At which point the old guy in the bed next to me woke up and said, "No sugar." And it was really hard not to laugh too loud and wake up the other patients. As the nurse, who I suppose was in her early 20s, was doing my observation, she was having trouble getting the ECG pads to stick to my chest. And so she asked me, "Do you moisturise, as I can't get these pads to stick?" Well, I laughed so hard, I replied, "Do I look like I moisturise?" And she replied, "No, but you are from Essex." I had no words. I had no comeback. I was completely speechless, but really laughing. After a few more days, I was given an echocardiogram and I was eventually released. Sounds like I was in prison, but I think the correct term is that I was discharged with an appointment with the head of cardiology in a few days. I continued to struggle with this feeling of being very fatigued all the time, struggling for breath going up the stairs, but still the chemo continued and I felt awful. My body was fighting cancer, I was having this poisonous chemo pumped into my body and my heart was weakening as a result. A verse in the Bible that was very close to me during that time was Psalm 73 verse 26. "My flesh and my heart may fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forevermore." You know, I never lost and have never lost that supernatural peace that God gave me on day one. I've been very peaceful every day, not worried or anxious, just incredibly tired. I was due 6 cycles of FOLFOX chemotherapy, but shortly after my 5th cycle, my oncologist called to say that she had spoken to the drug manufacturer about the AF I had suffered because of my insistence that it was because of the FOLFOX. And the manufacturer said that a few people had reported AF as a side effect of the 5-FU element of FOLFOX, but it was so low it was not recorded on the standard side effects. And so this proves to all the doubters that I truly am one in a million, and now I can prove it. But this meant that my sixth cycle of chemo would not be happening, and the hope was that my heart would return to its regular sinus rhythm by itself. Sadly, it did not. Even though the chemo that caused my heart to go into atrial fibrillation had stopped, my heart had now somehow created a bad habit that needed to be corrected. So a cardioversion procedure was necessary. And that is where they stop your heart and start it again. Again, God's supernatural speed was at work. While all this was going on, I was still due a bowel resection surgery that would remove the two tumours in my bowel, but they could not easily do that while my heart was in AFib. So imagine my disappointment when I heard the normal waiting list for cardioversion was something like 23 weeks. I couldn't wait that long without chemo as the tumours in my bowel and liver would start growing again. Nonetheless, I believed, as always, for the best of medicine and the best of Jesus. I had a pre-op booked for that surgery, and I thought I would still go, even though it felt like the left hand, oncology, and the right hand, cardio, did not know what the other was doing or even wanted. How wrong I was. As I sat in the hospital, I was called for the first part of my pre-op. I was then told to wait in the corridor as a second part of that pre-op that prepared us for the exact operation we were having and what exercises we had to do before we were admitted would be explained to us. While waiting in the corridor, I heard a nurse come to the pre-op admissions desk and say my name. After a moment, she came down the corridor and asked if I was Andy Robinson. She introduced herself as a specialist cardiac nurse and asked, "Are you free tomorrow morning?" To which I replied, "Yes, why?" And she told me that I was going to have my cardioversion first thing in the morning. She also asked me, "Who do you know in the hospital? They must be very senior to have fast-tracked you like this. I've never had a situation like this where a massive waiting list has been bypassed and happened the next day." I explained to her that I did know someone very high up, but not in the hospital. Cardioversion is a relatively quick procedure that places a paddle or pad on your chest and one opposite it on your back, and then they shock you to see if your heart returns to sinus rhythm. They explained to me that they can only do this three times, as they know if it doesn't work on a third time, it will never work. As I was wheeled into theatre, I was given a general anaesthetic that would only keep me out for 5 or 10 minutes, just long enough to complete the procedure. When I woke, I knew instantly that it worked. I could feel things were back to normal. Well, apart from the two burn marks that I had back and front where the pads had been. They were like sunburn, to be honest. Uncomfortable, but nothing some after sun couldn't soothe. I was now feeling great, almost back to normal. I was so excited that the operation could now go ahead immediately. Sadly, once more, that was not the case. After the cardioversion, I was given a drug called apixaban, a blood thinner that would ensure the cardioversion remained a success. However, the surgery could not happen while I was on blood thinners, and I could not come off those for at least 4 weeks. This meant that the surgery would be delayed for another month. So, because of all these delays, it would be over 2 months from my last chemo cycle to the operation. All I had to do now was wait. Well, that's going to be another story for another podcast as we continue this. But thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you for being part of this podcast and listening. I'd love it if you'd subscribe or follow, give us a thumbs up, or whatever your podcast platform allows you to do. Tell your friends, as we'd love to really get this podcast moving. So thanks again for sitting in, and I'll speak with you soon.